Hello, this is Matthias and welcome to another episode of the Financial Independence Europe podcast. Today I interview Christina Meyer-Walker and she works for a leading digital bank in product design. She's also host of the Employee podcast, a podcast about leadership, employee satisfaction and company culture. And today we want to talk about how people can be more satisfied and happy in their workplace, how you could improve your happiness and how you find out when it's time to move on to somewhere else. So this episode is packed with a lot of actionable advice and personal stories. I hope you enjoy it. And please leave me feedback in the blog comments or on our Facebook group at financial-independence.eu/community. See you.
Welcome to the Financial Independence Europe podcast, where we interview people from all 44 European countries, all of them, about optimizing your life, geo-arbitrage, and making the most of your money. This with your hosts, Alvar, Erminta, and Matthias.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Financial Independence Europe podcast. And today we have a great guest, of course, and we have a topic we will discover, and it's about being an employee and what makes an employee happy and how you can improve your situation and what's all about this new work movement and when to move on to next job or whatever. So today I have a guest with me. It's Christina. Say hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. And you're kind of the host of a podcast that is about being an employee, improving organizations, leadership. And that's why I would say you're kind of a good person to ask about what makes you happy as an employee. But first of all, I would like to, you could introduce yourself, tell us a little bit, how old are you? What are you doing? Where's your money coming from? And so on. So please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much. So I'm Christina. I'm 33 years old. I've been living in Berlin for the past 15 years. I am a product lead. So I've been building digital products for the past 9 years, mostly mobile app products. So I started off in the agency world, and then I've been leading a product team in Zalando, Europe's biggest fashion e-commerce retailer, for the past almost 5 years. And I switched companies this year in summer. So I work as a product lead now at N26, which is one of the new cool modern banks, also mobile-based. So yeah, this is where my money comes from. On the side, I also run a podcast, as you just said. It's employee. It's about how can we all become happy at work again? And do we all need to leave our jobs and become self-employed and life coaches in Bali? I believe you can also become happy as an employee in a company. And that's what we're talking about in the podcast. And on the side, I also work sometimes as a product consultant or run workshops. So yeah.
I guess you're not getting a lot of sleep, but it's really cool what you do. And that's a lot of things. I would like to connect, why are we talking about that? Because in my opinion, many people are not satisfied with their current job, and they are also not changing their situation, and they're just pocketing their money, they're increasing their savings rate, and they put more and more money on the side into an ETF, and then they calculate some date when they can finally escape 9 to 5, and that's it. But my thought would be, what is if you maybe could just keep your job or also switch your job and just be happy right now in your employed work. And you can still become FI, but you can be happy right now. And that would be a nice topic to discover. And also, I think, pretty interesting for many of you out there. And so, Christina, first of all, as you're not part of the FI community, or are you? Do you know the concept? Are you also doing something about investing? Do you care about your money? What have you done so far?
So yeah, I mean, I'm South German. Obviously, traditionally, we South Germans like to save a lot of money and put a lot of money on the side. And this is in my genes, obviously. So I like to save. Mm-hmm. I'm also investing into ETFs. But that's basically it. And I, of course, have stock options in the companies I have worked or I work. But this is basically it at the moment for me. What I do not have is a secondary income screen, at least not a passive one. I mean, as I told you, I also have some freelance gigs on the side. For example, I teach at the Product Academy in Switzerland and ran workshops there. But then also here and there, I have smaller consulting gigs where I have a secondary income, which is not passive though.
Yeah, it's not passive, but at least it could become passive if you do an online course or something like that. I think it's pretty cool that you are able and capable to do also work on the side, because you never know how it will become in the future, and maybe you can earn some money with your podcast or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty cool. South Germans. And what would you say? I mean, it's pretty stupid, but everybody knows. But what is employment again? What is it? What makes it? What's the definition? Do you know that?
Well, I mean, how I define it in my podcast, I mean, eventually my podcast is called Employee, right? So the idea is how can you be an employee and still say yay about your job? So that's why I'm talking about me. It's just not being self-employed, but you're employed at a company, I don't know, for doing a certain things or doing multiple things. And then yeah, getting money at the end of the month. You also get paid vacation and paid sick leave. Maybe that's how I would define employment. And I exclude self-employment from this.
Yeah. And for the company, you're kind of the employees are the capability to scale their company, and they are the leverage, and they deploy more employees, and by that they increase the size and the turnover of the company.
So you're being a fixed cost to the company. Let's put it that way. Somehow.
Yes. Yeah. Hello, fixed cost. Nice to see you in the office. Why are you happy as an employee? We talked earlier, and you're pretty happy right now. Are you doing stuff that matters to you? And why are you happy? What's the difference maybe to other people? Can you elaborate on that maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that I was always happy in my work situation. And as you already mentioned, what was the motivation to start my podcast? Actually, that was one of my main motivations to start my podcast, because I felt maybe not really independent in my job. And this feeling also created this unhappiness at some point. So I was on a sabbatical for 3.5 months last year. And then I came back. And I mean, I spent 3.5 months in Asia, just traveling, being a lot of in silent retreats, not speaking for a week, you know, meditating the whole day. So, and if you do that for a while, there's a lot of things like happening inside you, and maybe you connect more to yourself and to your inner truth and what you actually want to do. And then I came back into my old job, and the whole company and the job and everything didn't change, but I have changed like 360 degrees. So I came in and I was like, okay, I cannot do this anymore. And then I always had this feeling I need to go into this gray building. It felt like a jail to me. And at some point, even though I worked in a very, very modern environment, to be fair, but just for me, the thing I was doing and in the surrounding was not right for me anymore. And then I talked to a lot of people because I said, okay, maybe I'm just not a good product manager. Maybe it's not what I should do. So I figured out what my strengths are a year before I did the StrengthsFinder test by Gallup. And it changed the world for me just to understanding me and my personality better, understanding what my strengths are and also what my so-called weaker strengths are. And then I thought, okay, maybe there is another job out there with another job title that I don't even know that fits much better to my strength. So, and then I tried to find a job based on my strength, which is not possible today because no job search would allow that to search for a job based on your strength. I mean, I Google stuff like jobs for empathetic people, but then on the other side, I'm very competitive and they always tell you you should not work in a competitive environment. So that didn't work for me. And, yeah, you know, and then I figured out, okay, maybe I also don't want to work based on 40 hours a week anymore, but rather on, okay, this is your goal for the week. And whenever you achieve it, you're done for the week, you know, different concepts. And why I had all those ideas, by being super frustrated, I had all those ideas, to be honest. And that I talked to a lot of people, and then a lot of people usually told me, hey, did you know this company? They're doing this. Or, do you know this company? They're doing this. And then have you heard about this great tool called 50 Ways to Get a Job, which is a completely different approach on how to find a job. And it's exactly what I just described. So yeah, after talking to a lot of people, I had all this great input and inspired me a lot. And then I understand as well that it's not only me having this problem. I mean, there's a huge amount of people out there that have been working like for 5 or 10 years. So not necessarily beginners, but rather people that have been on job for 5 to 10 years, maybe made some money. And then now the question is a little bit, okay, now what? I can do this for the next 50 years, but it won't make me happy. So rather change something right now. And yeah, the idea then was to make this research public. And that's how my podcast started. And if you ask me now again, what makes me happy as an employee? I mean, back then I changed my situation. So I just changed completely the department I worked in. So I got a complete new challenge, a more business heavy focused product. So I had the chance to learn a lot in a different environment that helped. But then this year, there was so many new things happening in my life. And by constantly putting work into understanding myself better, understanding my strength better, understanding how I add value to other people. Yeah, it just led me to a fact that I said, I think I really need to do something else. And initially, my plan was also to become self-employed and start my own thing. But then this really interesting offer came in of my current job. And it was a really hard decision for me because I thought I want to be completely independent right now. But then this job came and I saw the situation that I can learn a lot. So I actually checked my vision board. So I created a vision board at the beginning of the year. And I understood I also want to I want to give. And that's what I did in the first half year. And the second half year for me is also to take in terms of learning and in terms of also getting inspired by other people and learn something great from new people, learning a complete new industry I had no experience in before. So yeah, then at some point, going through my pros and cons, there were much more pros in going again in an employed situation with a company, with a very modern company and with a lot of flexibility. Yeah, and for me, that was a great fit due to the industry and to the topic I could learn a lot from, but also from the people. I mean, they have a female CPO, which I thought is quite interesting. And so there were more pros for the learning part than the cons for becoming self-employed.
Okay, so I guess you first of all started to understand yourself better by mm-hmm. using the StrengthsFinder concept to know where you're really good in, and then you try to find a company or a job or at least also freelance work where these strengths are being used. And there's a gap right now, as you mentioned, that you can't, like, there's no search engine for a job. You can just search for I can program or I can do business model canvas, but you cannot search for like empathy or mm-hmm. whatever strengths can you have. Like, I don't know. Anyway, but I think that's a gap. Maybe we should run a startup and build that. Anyway.
I have to say, I try to answer that questions, and there are already like interesting concepts out there. Mm-hmm. So if you go through my podcast, you will find a lot of interviews, for example, like Truffles. They are mm-hmm. like the Tinder for job search, and they're trying to incorporate a lot of these kind of things. There was another example. I interviewed the founder of Good Jobs because everyone I meet usually said, I want to do something good in the world. So they somehow try to fix this problem. Then there's one episode on 50 ways to get a job with the author of the book and the online tool. So mm-hmm. this is a really great episode also on how to approach job search in a complete different way. And there was obviously Annika Stör, like she impressed me the most because she tried out 30 jobs in 1 year to figure out herself better and what is fun to her and what she likes doing. So I think there's not this one online tool. So you're right, maybe there's opportunity. But I also talk to a lot of recruiters, and even when I hire myself and I don't have a lot of time, like I just screen the CV, and if there are not like certain keywords I want to see, I just do not have the time to go deeper and understand if this person might be a fit anyways. So I'm guessing I'm also a little bit part of the problem myself. But yeah, I think there's a lot of nice approaches, but it's not that easy that you can do it with one click. You have to put effort into it and it's work. But I think there shouldn't be any more worthful work in like getting to know yourself better.
That's definitely a good investment always, especially if you do it early in your career. Then you don't waste time and you find a job that's really good. Also, my co-host Araminta is doing three tests in career finding, and she's volunteering right now in Kuala Lumpur in an NGO, and then she wants to also be a developer. So she's trying three things for I think 3 months, and let's see what it does. And that's really good for younger people if they just test and validate their assumptions what's maybe a good career for them. I will definitely also link the tools and the books you mentioned in the links in the show notes. And right now I would like to ask you, what is there's a new buzzword out there. It's called New Work. I've been like 3 years ago in an Intrinsify meetup in Brussels to learn about it. I still didn't got it completely. Does it mean that you just, if you work in a gray building and you want to do new work, that you paint it, or you have some yellow stickies in your office? Or what does it mean? What is new work? Do you have kind of examples how companies deploy new work concepts and improve the health of the company?
To be honest, for me, it's currently mostly a buzzword misused by 80% of the companies that use it. So that's just, first of all, whenever you read about new work, it often doesn't mean new work. And if a company promises you new work, this doesn't necessarily mean they actually like walk the talk. So yeah, for me personally, that means a very high level of flexibility in terms of times, working times and working location. I think for me, it embraces, well, creativity and flexibility and failure as well. I think purpose is a very important concept within companies that call themselves new work companies. So it's not about, it's making sure the employees gets the why he or she is doing something, and they understand when actually the goal is fulfilled, rather than like doing a task on a daily or weekly basis constantly. So it's really about being purpose-driven and also letting people figure out how they want to work and how they want to get to their goal. So I think these are the concepts which I would connect to new work. And I think what's important is that we understand the needs of the people working in this organization, because what I keep seeing everywhere is, Google and Facebook, they have those kind of offices, so let's do the same for our office. And I think that's not right, because different companies have different cultures, and a lot of companies try to copy cultures from other companies, which is not working, of course. So I think real new work companies that really put a lot of effort into understanding their own culture, their own company, their own developments and their own needs, and try to react to them. And I think also being agile, I mean, this is like the worst word for me, to be honest. Like whenever I come somewhere and someone tells me they're agile, I'm like, ah, you're not. You're probably just having a stand-up and you're misusing Scrum for something and you have a retro and this is why you think you're agile. And I think in most companies, it's very top-down. They work in the very worst waterfall and agile only starts in the delivery team because they're having, well, Scrum maybe. And I think agile for me also means, you know, being flexible and trying out new things. And if there's kind of this new concept, like, should we be able to work from anywhere in the world? I had a really interesting conversations with one of my team members this week because she's going to Brazil. And she said, she commented in the Slack chat and said, I will only be available like from 12 o'clock at noon. And I said, so this was maybe my old work soul saying to her. And I said, look, I think you can work from anywhere in the world where you want, but I think it feels better to me if you then are also available at the same working hours than we in Berlin. So there's no disadvantages for your colleagues. Because otherwise next week someone comes and wants to work from Thailand, which has crazy time shifts. So we don't even like work together during the 8 hours, you know? And then she said, like, she's much younger than me. And she said, why? And like, we had this trust conversation. And I said, look, I trust 150%. But then maybe it came out that I don't trust everyone, or it's my fear that something else can happen and I lose control. And in the end, maybe I also thought maybe this is not even me saying that, it's my former leads who didn't allow me to work from anywhere in the world, you know? And then I really went through, like, we had a really good conversation on it because I really tried to reflect where's my concern coming from. And then 2 days later, I went up to her desk and I said, you know what? I think you should not ask me. You should just ask the team and deal it with them. And if they're okay that you only start working at 12 o'clock noon time, Berlin time, I think I don't care because you guys should get the work done. But it was a really big conversation also with my inner self to understand what's happening there, you know? Because in my perfect world, you can work from wherever you want, at least you get the job done. But I think when you work together with the team, I also see the other side, you know, sometimes people work from home and I cannot reach them neither on their phone, not on Slack, not on email for 8 hours. And this is for me sometimes the feeling where I have the feeling, hey, I need something from you and it's fine that you work from home, but then I really also expect that I can reach these people through Slack or through our normal communication channels. I think there's a lot of communication that needs to be needed, but I think now going back to being agile, I think you should be open and flexible enough to try out new concepts and give them a try run for, let's say, a month, 3 months, depending on the thing, and figure out if it works for your team.
Yeah, true. And is she now able to work?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, she can work for like wherever. Mm-hmm. Like this is the rule we have in the team. So Every week, a person can work one day from wherever they want. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time that we just decided how do we deal with time shift, because eventually we have an office in New York and people might want to work from there. So, but it was important. I mean, I think it's important that you talk about it, that you raise the concerns. Mm-hmm. And based on that, you can try things out.
Yeah, you should just try it out and see if people can deal with it. I think if you have a couple of hours where you work at the same time, then I think it's enough. But it's only my opinion. What I personally don't like, often have you in Slack, for example, you have to be online all the time. I sometimes just move out to get some deep work done and not interrupted and so on. But that's something people have to figure out in this agile. It's not really agile, but they have to figure out how to get deep work done and not being in the chat all the time. It depends on what kind of work you do, I would say. Mm-hmm. You have other examples of what people are doing or good companies are doing? You mentioned that they have a strong purpose, that people give guidance by purpose to complete their goals and to know when they did good work, themselves and so on.
Yeah, I think for me, another big thing is coaching instead of telling people what to do. I mean, I had like incredible leads and I have like leads which were maybe not so incredible. And I think for me, the main difference was usually if they asked me questions so I could really become better, or if they told me that I should do it in a certain way and didn't leave me room for finding my own way in those things. Like, I think any individual, I mean, brings different strengths and different natural talents. So we actually approach problems maybe differently. And I think we should have the freedom to do so. But for me, there actually for the companies I interviewed in my podcast, there were like three companies, I think, that really stood out for me. On the one side, this was obviously Black Boat. They are a new work consultancy. A friend of mine works there, so I interviewed Katarina for that. And what I really like is they truly live it. They can work from wherever they want. They're a true bottom-up organization. Everyone can contribute and come up with own workshop concepts. And I think they also don't have vacation days. So whenever you need, I mean, first of all, they can work from wherever they want. So for example, my friend, she worked from Lisbon for a month just because she wanted to. And but then also when she really needs a vacation, like a real break where she's not reachable for the company, then she just tells them so. But they don't have a fixed amount of vacation days. They can take it when they need it. But she also said sometimes when they see that a person is working too much, they would even go over and say, hey, come on, you should also, it's healthy, you should also take a break, maybe you take 1 or 2 weeks off, so they really care about each other. And they just talk about things and make sure everyone can bring in what they can do best. And that's, for me, I mean, obviously there are New Work consultancy, but they try out those things by themselves. And they see, once she said, an office for me is a tool. When I need the tool to collaborate with other people, I go there. If I don't need the tool, but I rather need silence to work on something and create something, I'm doing that from home or from wherever I feel most creative. So there, my example number one.
That's really interesting. So first was also more about purpose and giving them the goals. The second one, coaching instead of telling people what to do, also provides them not only with flexibility, but with autonomy to figure out their own way. And I think what makes people happy and also me happy is autonomy to work where I want to work from, to also work when I want, and also create the way I want to work and I want to accomplish a certain goal. And I think that's what makes me happy. Anyway, so that's, I think, an important factor. And I would maybe now move on to boil down what factors are important to create a situation or a job where you strive. So what are the internal factors? And we talked a little bit about the external ones, some examples. But what could you do yourself to make your job situation more happy? For example, you could just maybe... The simplest way would be just to go to your boss and say, hey, look, I don't like the situation here. I'm not satisfied. And propose something what you would improve, what he could improve, she could improve. Are there other factors where you can do something about your job?
I think in general, you need to understand what is the point that makes you not so happy. And I mean, to be honest, even though we're trying to approach this topic very often so rational and objective, I think, yes, often it's the person. It's the person which is your leader. It's often the people you're working with. It's sometimes your team, and it's also okay. And I think you should not try to run away from it. I mean, you should always try to speak up and like try to communicate about it, because often your leads or maybe your colleagues, they're just so busy in like delivering what they think they have to deliver that they often miss the human aspect. However, I don't believe that you can work and be successful with everyone, because just people are different and personalities are different. And that's a great thing in terms of diversity. But there are also situations which often don't work. And what I figured out is that it's often because of the people we're working with. But then on the other side, it's also for me personally, I think you should figure out, is it maybe also the work environment that you feel blocked by something, that you have the feeling you cannot deliver the best thing you can because you're dependent on so many other things, or the company has a very slow pace and you actually want to be faster, or it's the other way around, it's too fast and you actually would need more time to think through things thoroughly, which is also fine, you know. I think you should detect, like, what is it that makes you so unhappy? Is it the fact that you have to go there every morning from 9 to 6 and you don't want to work from there? So what I think is usually a great way to approach it is that you start by yourself to figure out what your personality is. I mean, obviously, there's the StrengthsFinder test, but there's 16 personalities, which is for free. There's a lot of things on the internet. But then I think you should also figure out, where do you stand in your job? Because often we focus so much on these daily tasks that we have to do that we don't put it into a higher context. Like, what are other areas in my job that I'm maybe not so good at? Is there something I can learn? So for example, in product management, we usually have the 4 Ds of product management. These are just 4 phases. And figuring out, hey, is there maybe in another phase something I can learn I'm interested in, or like a tool or a technique I want to try out? But then you can also figure out, hey, is there maybe often companies are big enough that you can say, hey, maybe there's another part of the company which is more exciting than the one I'm currently working in. So you can, you know, there's a lot of things you can just look for yourself and try out and try to understand. Or like there's these questions, what did you like doing as a kid? What are you Googling when you're not being paid for? Like, what are you Googling when you're on vacation? So these are all questions that could help you finding out what you're really interested in. And maybe this is also the reason that you're not interested in what you're doing.
Yeah, it's interesting what people are Googling. Last week I met a friend and I asked him, and he's not in the FI scene. I asked him, what is he doing? What would he do if he doesn't depend on the money making? And he said he would like to learn woodworking. And he stays with the job because he thinks he cannot make money from woodwork, which is maybe... It is like that, but so that's what people are Googling. Also, I'm thinking about what I'm Googling now, but I will look into my history. Obviously, Google is tracking everything, so I will look what I did the last 4 weeks. And what you just mentioned is that you can also improve your satisfaction with your job just by improving your skills or certain skills. That is also interesting because that's something you couldn't do yourself. And I think when you're good in something, you're also more happy because you're in your comfort zone, or it just feels a little bit more comfortable, and you also get good feedback from your colleagues because you're kind of doing your performance and so on. So maybe it's also just good to improve your skills, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. But then also, I think what helped me, for example, a lot is when I started the podcast, seeing how other companies work, and then just open up a conversation. You know, if this is something that you want to like try out for your company as well, and being proactive and suggest it to your leads or to your company. I think there's like, you know, a lot of things, or maybe a lot of companies are doing great things, and why not being proactively the one who's coming up with those?
Yeah, that's good because you can also do it then yourself and don't have to wait until somebody else is taking the lead in that.
Yeah.
So I also suggested, I did a good job in suggesting stuff and being able to do it, for example, running internal events about machine learning, or you could even do an internal podcast or whatever.
Yeah.
So just suggesting is the best way because it's proactive, people like it. And if you have maybe a boss who don't like suggestions, then you maybe should think about switching. So that leads us to the next question. When is the time to switch your job? How do you know that it's not the right company for you anymore? See a checklist maybe?
So the other day, my former lead, she sent me a book, a recommendation, and it's called The Dip by Seth Godin. And it's a little book that teaches you when to quit and when to stick. So for me, it was already too late. I already quit. But I think for me, the moment is when you have the feeling you're not getting any further, you're not learning anymore, you cannot deliver, and you have the feeling you cannot be creative anymore. And I think being mentally blocked is like the worst thing that somehow could happen in your company. And then, for me, these are the reasons. If you're not learning, if you're somehow blocked, and if you cannot deliver on your fullest potential, maybe, I think that's for me a reason when you should quit. But maybe, you know, the company is also going through some interesting phases, and often then you have to wait a little bit until things are changing. I think if you still love the product, and if you still have the feeling you have the right people around you, and there are things that you can overcome this maybe 3 or 6 months of like slower pace, and still learn something and maybe focus on something else, then it makes maybe really sense to stick. But often these are situations where we just stay in because it's very comfortable. And I see a lot of people, like I see a lot of potential also, especially in large organizations. They enjoy like just to do the 9-to-5, they completely gave up. And I usually think it's really sad for the people because, I mean, for them, they think, oh yeah, I get my money at the end of the month, but everyone brings those natural talents. And I don't know, even though I also hate a lot of things sometimes in my job, you know, I'm still going there and like I'm in a good mood and I say, look, let's do that. And I bring this natural energy. And I have the feeling a lot of people in large organizations, they seem to me so bad inside because they're just going there, sitting, not being passionate. And I think we should not waste 40 hours a week on things that we don't love.
That's too much. And you could, if you don't like it, you should automate it. But not often, that's not often possible. What I also recognized is that you sometimes need patience because, as Steve Jobs says, it's always getting worse before it's getting better.
Yeah.
So sometimes giving you at least 6 months to go through a difficult period is maybe a good way to do it. And what I also did when I was not satisfied with my job is to use an app called Mr. Mood. And there I was checking in every morning if I like to go to work or if not. And if then you dislike going to work for a longer period, then you should really move on.
I actually did the same. I am usually using the happiness planner every day. And every evening I have like a quit, yes or no, check. And then at some point I only had like, I don't know, three no's and the rest were yes. And I said, okay, that's the point.
Okay, so we definitely linked the app and also the Dip book in the show notes. That's really a good way to measure it and not to switch too early because, shit happens everywhere. And sometimes you just maybe change your perspective on that. And focus on the good things sometimes for a period of time. Yeah, that's about it, I would say, what you can do. Now, I would like also to, we talked about when to switch. And now I would say maybe employment is not for you. Maybe you need some more freedom. Maybe you want to shape the product even more. When would you say it's good to go for freelance or found your own company? When do you know to do that? Does it depend on your character? Does it depend on how much you want to earn? Because sometimes you have a ceiling or you cannot earn much more in a company as an expert. What would you say is a good, good time to switch to another path that's not employment?
I think this highly depends on what kind of jobs we're talking about. I mean, now we're in our very fancy bubble. I mean, you know, working in tech and product management, I mean, I can get a job like that everywhere I want to go. So I think for me, it's quite easy to speak. However, there are jobs which are maybe not so easy. So imagine you're a driver for a delivery service, or you work in a warehouse of a big e-commerce company, or you're a teacher, you're a nurse, or, this maybe not very well-paid jobs, which require a lot of physical effort as well, and where you, through this whole of physical effort that it requires, you may be sick more often. And so I think being a freelancer comes with a lot of advantages, but it also comes with some risks. And I think I understand why certain industries or certain jobs, or for certain people in certain jobs, it's easier to jump into freelance than it is for others, first of all. And so if I just talk, let's maybe focus a little bit more on the more well-educated kind of modern jobs, such as in the tech industry, for example, or consulting or design or whatever. I think then you should always go to freelance whenever you feel it's the right moment. I think it can be hard to do that right after university, but on the other side, I mean, look at all those examples of N26, of Facebook. They just founded their companies right after university. So I think if you want to found a company, obviously you can do that right after university. Often makes sense, because then you do things and you learn them right away, and you're not maybe so influenced by certain management styles of others, which might not be right. But if you, of course, want to do more consulting kind of role and becoming a designer as a freelancer, I think here it makes sense to spend some years in a company just to learn something, but then really be sure to make a plan for yourself. What do you want to learn? And once you've learned that, you move on. I think if you do have this inner drive, and if you're not, like, don't have this fear of financial loss, or, all these fears that keep you from doing it, then you should always do it, because it gives you the ultimate freedom. And I think you will constantly also make sure to work on things you want. You will find your own style. And I mean, money is one point of it, but I think it should not be your main driver for doing it. And I think a lot of people maybe don't have this drive, and a lot of people are feeling comfortable or are just good in operating what other people came up with or delivering on it. And I think this is a great skill. And I think also here you can become a freelancer as a project manager or whatsoever. But I think some people just feel comfortable by also having all the security that comes with employment situations. I mean, the labor law in Germany is quite great, especially for employees. So I think it always depends on the person. And if the security is more important than flexibility, then you should maybe not do it. But if flexibility is more important and you work in one of those, let's call them rather modern jobs, I think it's pretty easy to do that.
Yeah. And what we also try with financial independence, for example, is that you could just work in a company, and you could create your passive income, save a little bit, and maybe you can create your own security by having cash flow of maybe 1,500 euros or 1,000 euros, what you need. And then if you then have security, you have a check there, and you can then see, do you have the drive to shape your industry, shape your niche, and you want to also learn and grow beyond your main skill? Like you need to do sales, you need to do HR maybe, and learn to speak about your product. If you want to do that, then it's maybe a good time to switch to a freelance role or found your own company. I think that needs to be planned ahead, maybe 1 or 2 years. To maybe get your first customer, to build your network, and then it's possible. At least in Central Europe, you have also your it's a security that you're not dying from hunger.
Yeah, and I think there are also companies who are truly encouraging that you're doing side things. So, for example, I interviewed Andreas Schanzenbach from Chromatics, their creative agency from Dresden, and so. First of all, they bring in coaches to work, like not agile coaches, but actually real personal coaches. And to help their employees to get them to know themselves better, because they said if they put a lot of work into the personal development of their employees, they are becoming much better in their work. Interestingly, it rather increases retention for the company. So it's not that, okay, now I know myself and my strength better, so I'm going to leave and become a freelancer. That's quite interesting. And second of all, they also encourage them to bring on projects to work, so they can work on their magazines or whatever they do, on the side. Because it's a win-win situation. It's great for the company, so they increase their network. But on the other side, it increases a lot the employee motivation. So And in the end, this results in better work results, because if the employees are more creative and have the feeling I can do my own stuff at work, the creativity increases, and then, of course, the work increases for a creative agency. I think there are also great examples from companies that encourage this kind of side projects.
Yeah, so the mix of being employee and freelance, and maybe you just work as an employee for 4 days or 3 days a week, and then you can also do your side hustle or a real proper freelance and build from there, and also incorporate the skills you learned into your main job. I think that's underestimated, that what you learn in your other jobs or in your side hustles, what you can bring really into the company. And maybe they are surprised, wow, you can do that, you can run a podcast, or you can sell white papers in the internet. It's really cool. So can you do that also for our company?
Yeah,
that can work.
And but this is maybe one point to mention, where I have the feeling the majority of companies is not there yet, because I have the feeling I to be honest, I asked last year in winter, I asked if I could go out to four days a week, because obviously I had my side things to do and I was not allowed to do it. So I think this is something that a lot of companies, and I hear that also from a lot of colleagues, that I would like to only work 4 days a week, where companies are very strict. I think it's okay for mothers and for people that have kids. For those, the acceptance level is much higher. But if you don't have kids and if you just want to do your own thing, companies are not very open. And I hear that from a lot of people.
Mm. Yeah, maybe you can get a cat, or you have also your parents, you can take care of them. You can say that you can take care of them and you don't. That would be possible, but it's strange. I think it will change. And now we slowly have to wrap up, although we could maybe also talk a little longer. But what will be the future of employment? There are these platforms like Upwork, like Fiverr, like whatever, and also internal platforms. Do you think we will become freelancer in the future? Everybody will become freelancer. Do you think maybe we only have to work 2 days because of the automation? Yeah, what do you think?
At the beginning of the year, I spoke in Bremen on a conference, and there was a junior professor, and she deals with new work, and she said the current developments show that maybe in a few years, companies are just a loose construct of people coming together on a project basis. And I thought, so she presented this concept, and I thought this was quite interesting. And I could imagine that, again, for certain industries, this makes sense. And I'm talking here now, again, probably the industries we're operating in. And I also believe this makes a lot of sense, because often, you know, we all have this dream, hey, I only want to work 9 months a year, and then 3 months I can traveling, and you just have more flexibility. But then on the other side, also, it's better for the for the companies themselves, because they don't need to plan all the resources ahead all the time, you know, and then the resources are stuck with the company, even though they maybe don't need them, because especially in Germany, I mean, as I said, the labor law is quite beneficial for the employee side of things. And once you hire people, you have them in your company, and it's really, really hard to after the probation period to, if you don't have enough work anymore, the business is not doing so great. So what are you doing with those people? So I think it's on both sides, on the employee side, but also company sides, this can be very beneficial. And then you can also choose and try out new things. You're maybe not so tied to the job title. I think that's a great concept for the industry I'm operating in. But I guess if we talk now about other jobs, like drivers, the warehouses, nurses, teachers, for them, it's maybe not such a great concept, because they maybe require a higher level of security as well. And the question is, how do we, or where do we develop as a society? Is it when a lot of automation will happen in the future, it's then just the survival of the fittest, and the ones like which are well educated and manage to actually find their way through society and still have a job, this kind of creative jobs will still exist. But then what happens to all the other jobs? I do believe that adding freelancing in terms of like care of older people or care of sick people and all this kind of stuff is not a good idea.
Mm. You can also not be a nurse from Bali for Germany. Difficult. I mean, somehow maybe in 40 years possible, but not now. And I think we have to disconnect income from work, because then you can work what you really want even more, and you don't have the fear. And I think if more people don't have fear and anxiety, and they have this abundance mindset, and I think society and humanity as a whole can strive and grow even further without having the fear to get basic needs covered. And I think that has to come up from governments, but we have to ask for it. And I mean, they ask for it for 15 years. There's a basic income movement and so on. I think that's really important to make work optional, because we don't need all the people then in 10 years. I mean, we can automate really a lot of things.
Yeah, but I think also with automation, I don't know. I mean, you know, when the computer was introduced, everyone thought all these people will lose their job. But I think it's just shifting somewhere else. I think these kind of jobs are just intermediate jobs until you can automize them. And there will always be intermediate things. You know, when the computer was introduced, who would think that all those people that lost their job would then maybe work as customer service agents for all the tech companies? You know, it's a shift. And I think also customer service, warehouses, drivers, of course, this is just intermediate solutions for before automation. And I think once these jobs are automized, there will be something new coming up where you also always need people, you know? So I think it's just a lot of shift happening. And the problem is that I have, who teaches those people what to be agile means? I mean, great that we're all aware of it, but I think, when I told about this coaching concept of my friend, I think actually these people need to be coached on how to deal with their free time, on how to be agile and how to be adaptive to new environments, because I'm not sure if this, maybe these are the people who are somehow feel a little bit lost often, because no one speaks to them or like shows them also that there are not only disadvantages, but there are also a lot of opportunities for them.
I think that's also the most important thing for society, to help these normal people, I would say, to be part of society, to coach them. Maybe you can found an NGO to do that. Maybe you can put more money into local communities in rural areas of East Germany that they don't vote for the wrong party. And I think that's the most important thing. And you also see in America, United States, many people are not working. They're not even in the statistics. They're just playing games, getting disability money. And it's a huge amount of people. And you have to bring them back to the society. If you, as a rich people, also want to, you want to live in a nice country, you don't want to live in a gated area. So that's important. And that's also where we have, as tech people or as good earners, we have little responsibility to help them and to be part of society.
Yeah, because imagine when we talk about like consuming, imagine if people have more time and they don't learn how to use their free time wisely, or to be honest, just to deal with themselves. I mean, the majority of us always, that we cannot deal with ourselves anymore. Not a lot of people can sit silently in a room for 5 minutes. We need to make sure that if these people start to consume more in their free time, this is going to be a catastrophe for our environment, you know? That's why I think it's really important that we make sure that people are more self-aware, that they can deal with their free time, they can create value for the society. Because there's, I don't know, there's this movie, maybe you've seen it on Netflix. It's called Idiocracy. And I mean, it's a really stupid comedy about how the future could look like. But when I saw it, I actually didn't find it so funny, because there's a lot of truth into it. And I think just seeing people like not really moving anymore, just wasting their time in front of the television, like watching very, very stupid things. And I mean, you know how it is with affirmation in the end, you know, if you, or manifestation, you know, if this is the stuff you consume every day, this doesn't make us, our society, much better. And I think also, just buying things and like increasing waste. And so these are actually the threats that I see coming up when people have more free time, because no one teaches them how to deal with themselves. And
I have the hope that the movements, for example, the zero waste movement, they're crossing the chasm, we would say, they go mainstream, and then people hopefully adapt to that. You have a lot of vegan restaurants and zero waste restaurants in Berlin, but not in the East Germany, I found out.
Also not in South Germany, like where I'm from. I mean, I'm a vegetarian for quite a while, and even like finding vegetarian options is very, very, very hard in the South already. And I think also this problem of being unemployed is also coming to the South, especially to the rural areas. And we're having the exact same problems there. And the problem is that what I observe also with a lot of my friends is that if they have like 5 or 10 minutes of spare time, they're getting nervous. And I think smartphones don't help with that, because then you're constantly getting distracted by Instagram. You constantly have the feeling to do something, you know, to feel better. I just read an interesting little Buddhist story yesterday about like people sitting in the garden. So the first person comes and sits down, and after 1 minute he gets up and tries to fix this and this and this and this, constantly tries to fix something in the garden. The second one comes in and he reads a magazine and then also imagines how he can improve. And the third one is coming in and constantly trying to make plans in his head how he can improve things in the garden and for his life. And all of three of them really couldn't find peace and couldn't just sit down and enjoy the garden, imperfect as it is. And I think this just reminded me a lot on how hard it has become to our society just to sit down and enjoy life, you know? And I think especially if you have more free time and mostly getting distracted by consumerism, that's a big threat.
I can recommend reading the book Power of Now from Eckhart Tolle and also going, I have to go to a silent retreat to shut up.
Yeah, you should. It's really good. It's a really good experience.
Yeah, I should do that for the next vacation. We have to wrap up because we have 55 minutes now. Nobody will listen if we have above 1 hour. So where can people find you online?
So I think most easily is on LinkedIn. It's Christina with a K, Walker with a CK, and Meyer with a AY. And then I'm also available on Twitter. So you can follow me on Mobile Geek Girl. And obviously, there's a lot of topics in my podcast called Employee.
Employee.org. Yay, like yay. Yeah. And what is one resource not well known that you could recommend somebody for investing, if you like, but also for employee or being an employee or self-improvement, if you want?
I think since we talked so much about becoming financially independent, I would like to recommend Be a Free Range Human by Marianne Cantwell. So it's one of those life coaches, but actually I really liked her book, and I normally don't like the books of all the life coaches, but it's a very interactive book. So she just asks you a lot of questions and helps you to find out what you really like doing and how this could become your maybe next side gig. And it's a very interactive book. I like it a lot. And especially if you're in the very start, you have no idea what to do, I would start with this one.
Cool. And number one actionable tip for someone who just got started on their path to FI, but you can also say her work life or improve their career if you want.
Figure out what you really like doing and what your natural strengths and talents are. So do the strength finder test, invest not only in the 5 strengths, but in the 34. Because the strength finder test, usually if you only pay the €16, you only get your 5 strengths, which is already a very, very good investment because they tell you a lot. But the second one is like, if you get all the 35 strengths, you will also figure out what are 5 weaker strengths. And that was very eye-opening to me as well, to not focus on those jobs maybe in the future.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Christina. See you soon. It was nice to talk to you again after 20 years. seeing you in a concert, or what was the last time we have met?
Probably in Magnet Club in Berlin, listening to emo punk rock.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, we don't tell people about it. So thank you very much. See you soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hey, Matthias, do you think there are not financial independence Facebook groups yet?
Yes, there's definitely a shortage in financial independence Facebook groups. That's why we want to create another one. And the real reason is that we want to get some feedback on our episodes, to have a conversation with our listeners, to follow on the topics. And you might also have some questions around our content.
Gotcha. And also, we've been talking with more of you guys at meetups, on Reddits, in Facebook groups. The FI Europe retreat obviously we organized. And this is in the end the main reason why we started the whole podcast project. To talk to guys like you, learn more from you, case studies, answer questions, and like hopefully all grow and learn from that together in the end and become stronger, smarter, and hopefully also richer people. So, you know, Matthias, say I'm interested in this. Where do I find this Facebook group?
Yeah, just go to your Facebook app and type in FI Europe Podcast, or just click in our show notes. There's a link for the Facebook group, or go to our website. There's also a link. So yeah, just type in FI Europe Podcast. See you in the group.
Thank you guys for listening to this episode. We hope you learned something new and enjoyed the show. You can support us by doing this. Subscribing through your favorite podcast program and leaving us a review. Following us on Instagram and Twitter at Financial Independence Europe. Sending us an email with questions and feedback. We would love to hear from you. All the mentioned articles, books, and cool resources can be found in the show notes at financial-independence.eu. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.